We're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 10, Text 36. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutade Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschita Deshitarine. Narayana Pandideka Bharai Udar Chaitanya Charan Vinu Nahi Jane Ar. Narayan Pandit, the 14th branch, a great and liberal devotee, did not know any shelter but Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. Purport: Narayan Pandit was one of the associates of Srivast Thakur. It is mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Anchakanda, 8th chapter, verse 36, that he went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri with the Thakur's brother, Sri Ram Pandit. Sriman Pandit Shaka, Prabhur Nijabritya, Deuti Dharena Jabe, Prabhu Korain Nritya. The 15th branch was Sriman Pandit, who was a constant servitor of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He used to carry a torch while the Lord danced. Purport: Sriman Pandit was among the companions of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when the Lord performed Sankirtan. When Lord Chaitanya dressed himself in the form of the goddess Lakshmi and danced in the streets of Navadvip, Sriman Pandit carried a torch to light the way. Shuklambar Brahmachari Bada Bhagyavan Jar Anna Magi Kari Kaila Bhagavan. The 16th branch, Shuklambar Brahmachari, was very fortunate because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu jokingly or seriously begged food from him, or sometimes snatched it from him forcibly and ate it. Report: It is stated that Shuklambar Brahmachari, an inhabitant of Navadvip, was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's first companion in the Sankirtan movement. When Lord Chaitanya returned from Gaya after initiation, he stayed with Shuklambar Brahmachari because he wanted to hear from this devotee about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Shuklambar Brahmachari collected alms of rice from the inhabitants of Navadvip, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took pleasure in eating the rice that he cooked. It is said that Shuklambar Brahmachari was one of the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas during the time of Lord Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Lord Krishna begged food from the wives of the Yajnik Brahmins, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed a similar pastime by begging rice from Shuklambar Brahmachari. Nandana Acharya Shaka Jagate Vidito Dukaiya Dwi Prabhur Jarghare Stitta. Nandanacharya, the 17th branch of the Chaitanya tree, is celebrated within the world because the two Prabhus, Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, sometimes hid in his house. Purport: Nandanacharya was another companion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during the Kirtan pastimes in Navadvip. Srila Nityananda Prabhu, as Avadhuta, traveled on many pilgrimages, and when he first came to Sri Navadvip Dham, he remained hidden in the house of Nandanacharya. It is there that he first met all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his Mahaprakash, he asked Ramai Pandit to call Advaita Prabhu, who was hiding in the home of Nandanacharya, for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that he was hiding. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya also sometimes hid in the home of Nandanacharya. In this connection, one may refer to Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhyakanda, chapters 6 and 17. So it seems that Nandanacharya's home was a hideout. Sri Mukunda Datta Shaka, Prabhur Samadhyayi, Yaha Kirtane Nache Chaitanya Goshai. Mukunda Datta, a class friend of Lord Chaitanya's, was another branch of the Chaitanya tree. Lord Chaitanya danced while he sang. Purport. Sri Mukunda Datta was born in the Chattagram district in the village of Chanhara, which is under the jurisdiction of the police station named Padiya. This village is situated 10 kroshas, or about 20 miles, from the home of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. In the Gauragona Desh Deepika, it is said, Vajestitao Gayako Jao Madhukanta Madhuvratao Mukunda Vasudevao To Tattao Gauranga Gayako. In Vraja, there were two very nice singers named Madhukanta and Madhuvrata. They appeared in Chaitanya Lila as Mukunda and Vasudev Datta, who were singers in the society of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Lord Chaitanya was a student, Mukunda Datta was his class friend, and they frequently engaged in logical arguments. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would fight with Mukunda Datta using tricks of logic. This is described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Kanda, chapters 11 and 12. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned from Gaya, Mukunda Datta gave him pleasure by reciting verses from Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna Leela. It was by his endeavor that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami became a disciple of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, as stated in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhyakanda, chapter 7. When Mukunda Datta sang in the courtyard of Srivas Prabhu, Mahaprabhu danced with his singing. And when Lord Chaitanya for 21 hours exhibited an ecstatic manifestation known as Sata Prahariya, Mukunda Datta inaugurated the function by singing. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised Mukunda Datta by calling him Kadajatiya Beta, because he attended many functions held by different classes of non-devotees. This is stated in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhyakanda, chapter 10. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dressed himself as the goddess of fortune to dance in the house of Chandrasekhar, Mukunda Datta began the first song. Before disclosing his desire to take the renounced order of life, Lord Chaitanya first went to the house of Mukunda Datta, but at that time Mukunda Datta requested Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to continue his Sankirtan movement for a few days more before taking sannyas. This is stated in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhyakanda, chapter 26. The information of Lord Chaitanya's accepting the renounced order was made known to Gadadhar Pandit, Chandrasekhar Acharya, and Mukunda Datta by Nityananda Prabhu, and therefore all of them went to Katva and arranged for kirtan and all the paraphernalia for Lord Chaitanya's acceptance of sannyas. After the Lord took sannyas, they all followed him, especially Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Gadadhar Prabhu, and Mukunda Datta, who followed him all the way to Purushottam Kshetra. In this connection, one may refer to Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Antyakanda, chapter 2. In the place known as Jaleshwar, Nityananda Prabhu broke the sannyas rod of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukunda Datta was also present at that time. He went every year from Bengal to see Lord Chaitanya at Jagannath Puri. Vasudeva Datta Prabhur Britya Mahashai Sahasramukhe Jar Guna Kahile Nahoy. Vasudeva Datta, the 19th branch of the Sri Chaitanya tree, was a great personality and a most confidential devotee of the Lord. One could not describe his qualities even with thousands of mouths. Purport. Vasudev Datta, the brother of Mukunda Datta, was also a resident of Chattagram. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat it is said, Jar Stane Krishna Hoy Apane Vrikroy. Vasudev Datta was such a powerful devotee that Krishna was purchased by him. Vasudev Datta stayed at Srivas Pandit's house, and in the Chaitanya Bhagavat it is described that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with Vasudev Datta and so affectionate toward him that he used to say, I am only Vasudev Datta's man. My body is only meant to please Vasudev Datta, and he can sell me anywhere. Thrice he vowed that this was a fact and that no one should disbelieve these statements. All my dear devotees, he said, I tell you the truth. My body is especially meant for Vasudev Datta. Vasudev Datta initiated Sri Nandana, Yadunandana Acharya, the spiritual master of Raghunath Das, who later became Raghunath Das Goswami. This will be found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, 6th chapter, verse 161. Vasudev Datta spent money very liberally, and therefore Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Shivananda Sen to become his Sarakela, or secretary, in order to control his extravagant expenses. Vasudev Datta was so kind to the living entities that he wanted to take all their sinful reactions so that they might be delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is described in the 15th chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita's Madhya Lila, verses 159 through 180. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in his Anubhasha, there's a railway station named Purvavasthali near the Nabadeep railway station, and about a mile away in a village known as Mamgachi, which is the birthplace of Vrindavan Das Thakur, there's presently a temple of Madan Gopal that was established by Vasudev Datta. The Gaudiya Math devotees have now taken charge of this temple, and the Seva Puja is going on very nicely. Every year, all the pilgrims on the Nabadeep Parikrama visit Mamgachi. Since Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur inaugurated the Nabadeep Parikrama function, the temple has been very well managed. This Vasudev Datta was an exalted devotee. He prayed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that liberate all the living beings in the universe. And if you think they're too sinful, then you can give all their sinful reactions to me. I'll accept them. And you give them freedom from material existence. So he was very sincerely, he prayed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way, desiring the deliverance of the fallen souls. And yet it's mentioned here that he was extravagant in his expenditures, so much so that Mahaprabhu appointed Shivananda Sen to take care of his treasury, his expenditures, to control his extravagant expenses. Such things are sometimes found, that someone is a pure devotee, and yet some characteristic is there, which is idiosyncratic or in some way discrepant and needs attention. So sometimes this may happen, and particularly in regard to exactly this, that in our society, ISKCON, there's a lot of opportunity for accumulating capital, and even a pure devotee may spend the capital extravagantly, and therefore some control is required. Some control is required. Yes. Vasudev Dutt, there's no question of spending extravagantly for sense gratification. That would be not expected. But in some way or other, spending extravagantly. I don't know the details, whether he was simply spending more than he had. That's one way of extravagant expense, that you spend everything so that you have nothing left with which to maintain your establishment, or spending on things that are not necessary, or being over liberal with people who are asking for money for this or that. There's lots of ways to misappropriate or extravagantly appropriate money. Sometimes in regard to the functions of BBTs, Srila Prabhupada would say that this or department was an extravagance, that it was not required. So we take it that Vasudev Dutt couldn't have been spending for sense gratification, and yet he was spending. Sometimes we find that in our society also, that something is done which is extravagant. Actually, it's not required, but so much money is spent for it. Or it is required, but there's no... what's the word? There's a specific term. Yeah, there are no budgetary controls, no budget. Just the money, the cause is good, the money's coming in, the money's going out, and there are no limits on the budget, no fiscal control. Just money's coming in for a good cause, money's going out for a good cause, and how it's coming in and how it's going out is unaccounted for or accounted for, but not overseen or not carefully considered, so that the expenditure is extravagant. Sometimes something is spent on something which is needless or impractical, something that's pie in the sky. Someone's collecting for a grand project which could never be realized, and then spending to establish something that could never be established. That's another way of losing money. Sometimes money is spent on a program which is not our program. It may be very generous, it may be very appealing to the public, but it's against the principles of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It may be charitable, it may be philanthropic, but it's not, it doesn't follow the directions given by the founder Acharya, even though it's maybe considered a very good program. So money may be spent that way. Sometimes salaries, Prabhupada would attack salaries. Why is this person, you know, the cause is good, and the person is capable, but so much is being spent for salaries. Telephone, Prabhupada would attack telephone expenses. Why are they talking so much? Prabhupada would attack travel expenses. Why do they need to travel so much? Even though they might be traveling for the service of Krishna, why so much money on travel? Why so much money on telephone? Why so much money on electricity? Prabhupada would see fans turning in Mayapur. Prabhupada would see lights left on. And he would be extremely disturbed. You're rich men's sons. You may not care. But we can't see these things. We can't ignore these things. For Prabhupada, it meant that Krishna's energy was being wasted for nothing. So that was another kind of extravagance. It's a kind of American endemic extravagance that we leave a room and we're going to come back later, so why should we turn out the light? Let it burn for nothing till we come back so that we don't have to flick the switch again. In so many ways, money can be wasted. Simply someone spending money and doesn't know how to spend it. He's not an expert at spending money. He's in charge of purchasing or building or doing something, but he doesn't know how to spend money properly, and so he's cheated. Or he spends more than he needs to spend because he doesn't give the necessary attention to reducing the expenditure. Terribly, one may borrow money. One spends money he doesn't have. So one puts it on a credit card and pays, 18%, 24% interest. So that one is spending Krishna's money for the privilege of spending more money than one has. That's another extravagant, even though it's for the temple, it's for Krishna, but it's another kind of extravagant expenditure, spending money uselessly on interest, high interest rates, because one doesn't know how to manage expenses. Overdoing something, making a what they call scope creep. You have a project which is meant to be this big, but a little more, and pretty soon it's a skyscraper. It's the what Prabhupada called using a cannon to kill a mosquito. Becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. Again, because there's no fiscal control, because there's no discipline. Fiscal discipline. So money gets spent for a good cause in a bad way. Well, lots of things can happen. And it depends on the person. Some people are gifted. They're not a penny will be spent needlessly. They're so careful with expenses that every paisa will be accounted for. Nothing will be spent without careful consideration. Nothing will be spent needlessly. One of the first articles I read about Krishna consciousness movement depicted Srila Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, and one of his disciples, who was described as a college professor, which meant Hayagriva, asked Srila Prabhupada for money for postage stamps. And Prabhupada replied that one shouldn't ask the spiritual master for money. A principle. Money shouldn't go out the door without a fight. So some people are very careful with money and other people are carefree. They don't think about it very... it's just not their nature to give such careful attention to money. They'll give careful attention maybe to aesthetics, how the deity is dressed, or how the kirtan is performed. Everyone has different strengths. Vasudeva Dutt's strength special strength was kirtan. He was such a wonderful kirtan man. Mukunda and Vasudev both. And, of course, that he was filled with love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it seems that, fiscally speaking, he was a disaster. When it came to money, he was so bad at it that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appointed Shivananda Sen. Shivananda Sen apparently was very expert in such affairs. He managed the whole journey of so many devotees every year from Navadvip to Puri, and saw to all the, there were so many tolls to pay, there must have been boga and this and that, in a big yatra like that, so much money has to be spent. But he managed everything in such a way that everything was done nicely. And not only the money was spent, but proper accommodations were there, except on one occasion when Lord Nityananda Prabhu complained. But proper accommodations were there. The ferries were there when they needed to cross the rivers. Prasadam was there. Everything was so arranged so that they had a very nice journey every year to Bengal. So it appears that he could move the material energy around very competently. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, appreciated Shivananda Sen. And equally Vasudev Dutt, who couldn't manage money at all, who was so bad at it that Shivananda Sen had to be appointed to see to it. Something else?
It was
Yeah, he was begging food from Shuklambar Brahmachari.
It was said that in a similar way that Krishna was begging food from the
yogic wives of the yogic Brahmins.
So where do you see the similarity there? Just in the fact that someone's begging food? Or
someone's begging and someone's giving.
Do you see any other similarity there?
They were giving out of pure devotional service. The wives of the Brahmins wouldn't give. Cowherd boys, get out of here. We're doing a yajna, can't you see? There's important business going on here. They were hard-hearted. They wouldn't give anything. But the wives of the Brahmins were all pure devotees. So when they heard Krishna Balaram, then immediately they wanted to give everything. They wanted to give themselves. They wanted to as much food, as much everything. So the full-heartedly, they wanted to please the Lord. So it seems that Shuklambar Brahmachari had that same mood, that he just wanted to satisfy Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. Something else? Yes? You have a question. Let a microphone come to you and then we'll all hear your question.
Just since we were on this topic of the wives of the Brahmanas and that pastime, I was wondering, because you said that the wives of the Brahmanas were pure devotees. Does that imply that the Brahmanas weren't? And if so,
that they weren't.
So it's possible to associate with Krishna without being a pure devotee?
Sure. Kamsa associated with Krishna. He was quite far from being a pure devotee. But association is of different kinds. Prabhupada gives the example that the mosquito is sitting on the body of the king. So he's associating with the king. But that kind of association is not very much appreciated by the king. So Kamsa was associating with Krishna, but not in the mood of pure devotional service. It was pratikul, not anukul. It was unfavorable, in an unfavorable mood, not in a mood of devotion. So the brahmanas, they also got the opportunity. Of course, they didn't get the opportunity. It's not mentioned that they saw Krishna. They saw the associates of Krishna, the cowherd boys. But they thought, these are ordinary cowherd boys. Why should we give to them? We're doing a sacrifice. We're Brahmins. They're not even Kshatriyas. They're just cowherd boys. And the people they're asking charity for are also not Brahmanas. Charity should be given to the Brahmanas. But Krishna's a Vaishya, and Balaram's a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas aren't supposed to be receive charity either. Charity should be given to the Brahmins. Don't you know that? So why are you asking charity from us? We're Brahmins. We're doing a sacrifice. Will you please let us get on with our important service and go? No, they didn't get the opportunity. They could have seen Krishna by their service. But no. They could have satisfied Krishna that Sudama satisfied Krishna just by a little chipped rice given with pure devotion. But the Brahmins were so stingy, they didn't give anything. So they missed their opportunity. But the wives of the Brahmins, they gave everything, as much as possible.
Thank you.
Something else? Yes? Hold on, continue it with the microphone in your hand.
If they are not pure devotees, how could they even see Krishna?
How can you see Krishna? You can see Krishna, but see Krishna pashyanapi napashyati, see without seeing. Just like this Bhagavad Gita is also Krishna, and so many scholars are reading it. But they're not seeing Krishna in the pages. They're not actually hearing from Krishna because they don't want to. They're hearing their own mental speculations. So they don't see Krishna. Or if they see Krishna, they see Krishna as a mythological hero, as a this or as a that, as a literary device. They don't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they don't have devotion for Krishna. Not even the beginning of devotion. But that Brahmin in South India was seeing Krishna just by turning the pages of Bhagavad Gita. He couldn't even read it. But because he was a pure devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're actually studying Bhagavad Gita. So the mundane scholars are touching Krishna in the form of Bhagavad Gita, and the pure devotee is also touching Krishna. But the devotee appreciates Krishna's presence and gets the benefit. And the mundane scholars have just the opportunity to commit offenses and not appreciate Krishna as he is. Again, the demons that Hiranyakashipu saw Lord Nrisingadev and Prahlad saw Lord Nrisingadev. But Hiranyakashipu saw him as death personified. And Prahlad saw him as his savior. When Krishna was in the wrestling arena of Kamsa, it's described so many different people saw him in so many different ways. To the cowherd boys, he was just like their friend. To the elderly ladies, he was just like their child. To the wrestlers, he was what? Like a thunderbolt, yeah. To the dull people, he was just like a dead stone. Because their consciousness was dull. So in different ways, different people to the see Krishna differently.
Thank you, Maharaj.
To the impersonalists, he's the representation of the ultimate truth, the impersonal Brahma. Everyone's seeing Krishna at every moment. Material energy is also Krishna. But the materialists are seeing, here's something for my sense gratification. And the devotees are seeing, here's Krishna's energy. So the devotees, the scientists, they're seeing, here's this wonderful energy which is working all by itself, doing everything. And the devotees are seeing, here's Krishna's energy. Krishna is making so many wonderful things possible. So the devotee, yomam pashati sarvatra, sarvam cha mayi pashati, tasyaham na pranashami, pranashami sachame na pranashati. The pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere and sees everything in Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, I'm never lost to him and he's never lost to me. But the materialist, naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudho yam na vijanati mam ebhya paramavyam. Being covered by yogamaya, they can't see Krishna. Duryodhana, Krishna appeared in the universal form before Duryodhana. Duryodhana thought, all tricky politician. One has to have the eyes to see Krishna. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. Otherwise, one will see Krishna, but one won't see Krishna. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Maharaj, in that pastime where Srila Rupa Goswami, he was, or Sanatana Goswami, he was meditating on a pastime of Radha and Krishna, and then a Brahmana was walking, and because he laughed, the Brahmana thought he's laughing at me, and it was considered as an offense, and the pastime disappeared. The pastime disappeared from the vision of Srila Rupa Goswami. So, in our day-to-day practice of Krishna consciousness, like it happens several times, like where maybe you are misunderstood or I misunderstand someone else. And so, like, how much to worry about that thing?
Should worry about it. We should worry about committing offenses to devotees. If we don't worry about it, we're sick. We're in, as Prabhupada says, a diseased condition. If we think, well, I may offend some devotees, what the heck? Then we're in a diseased condition. One should be very, very careful to avoid offending Vaishnavas. How much importance it's given. Kaviraj Goswami says, like a mad elephant entering your carefully tended garden. The offenses to a Vaishnava appear in your life and destroy all the devotional credit that you've accumulated by so much service. So how careful should we be to avoid offenses to devotees?
Are there any early signs that, yes, you have offended some Vaishnava and you need to rectify it? Are there any, or does it go to, it's over? If one commits offense to Vaishnavas, it's a very serious offense. Are there symptoms in the devotee that committed offense that would let him know that he's now become an offender?
There's symptoms all around. First of all, the devotee himself may express being offended. And then the first devotee thinks, well, anyway, ignores it. Or others may also say, you know, you offended. This devotee is offended. Eh, why should he be offended? I didn't do anything. So already he's in trouble. Otherwise, the symptoms, generally, the symptoms described by Kaviraj Goswami is that his service, Rupa Goswami describes, his service shrinks. What is that? Shreya Kareva Chandrika Vitaranam. It's described that by chanting Hare Krishna, one develops the full moon of devotional service. But by Vaishnava Parads, offenses to devotees, the opposite. It becomes the waning moon, decreasing, 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 till it's dark moon. So a general symptom is that one becomes weak in devotional service, less inclined to devotional service, more attracted to Maya than to Krishna. One becomes, offenses breed more offenses. He's offended devotees, and the offenses, now he increases his offensiveness. That happened, who was that, Ramchandra Puri? Made it his business to offend devotees. He'd look for the opportunities to criticize them. If there were no opportunities, he'd create the opportunities. And he became like a professional fault finder. So much so that he finally found fault with his own Guru Maharaj. That his Guru Maharaj was crying in ecstasy that I couldn't see Krishna. And he took the opportunity to instruct his Guru Maharaj, oh, why are you saying that? Krishna's everywhere. Spiritual masters said, get out of here. As long as I'm in your presence, I won't be able to go back to Godhead. He was rejected by his own guru. So these are some of the signs of the effects of Vaishnava. There are other signs, they're described. His lifetime decreases, his opulence decreases, his intelligence decreases. It's described in third canto, I believe, by offenses to devotees, lifetime, longevity, opulence, intelligence, all good fortune, which ruined. That, who was that other Puri? Ramchandra Khan, offended Nityananda Prabhu. His whole village was destroyed. The Muslims invaded, took over his house, arrested everyone, killed a cow and burnt it, and the Durga roasted it on the Durga Mandap. The whole, everything was destroyed because of offenses. We shouldn't underestimate the effects of committing Vaishnava aparas. One can find, one falls down, that Shobhari Muni, he was executing yoga very strictly, and he offended Garuda and fell down, attracted by sex life, and married so many daughters of a king, became a Grihamedi. Many examples. Offenses are very, very toxic.
Mm-hmm. Talking about offenses, would it help if someone offended me that I don't feel offended? That would not accrue the gravity of consequences on the other person? Because
that's the nature of a Vaishnava, that even though someone may offend him, he doesn't take the offense seriously. But Krishna takes it seriously. Even though the Vaishnava may not take it seriously, the Prabhupada describes Krishna takes it seriously. Krishna can't tolerate it. A man can tolerate the sun on his head, but it's very difficult to tolerate hot sand on his feet. So Krishna has a very difficult time tolerating offenses to his pure devotees. And if he begs forgiveness from the pure devotee, if the offender begs forgiveness and receives it, then he may be released. Otherwise, he has to suffer the results of his offenses.
So as a corollary, would it be better if I just gave the consequences, would be much less than what Krishna would give?
Excuse me?
Would it be better than if I just gave the consequences instead of Krishna giving the consequences?
If that way it would be much less. Yeah, sometimes it's good if you give the consequences. But that becomes, that's not our duty. Sometimes. But generally, the nature of the Vaishnava is not to be offended, not to seek revenge. Parikshit Maharaj could have revenged himself on the Brahmin boy or the Brahmin community, but that was not his duty. Vaishnava is humble, and he doesn't do that.
So again,
but if the king punishes him, it's good. That's the king's duty. You've offended an innocent person, sadhu, honest person, devotee of the Lord. The king's duty is to punish him.
Sometimes we get the feeling like, you know, that I should be offended because, you know, I'm just a fallen person. I've done nonsense activities. I've left Krishna. So, you know, I deserve what I get. Is there a way that I can pray for that person so that the person doesn't? You know, because I feel like there's nothing wrong in that
person.
That's
also there. That Amrish Maharaj was praying to the Sudarshan Chakra. That don't excuse him. He was thinking that he's a Brahmin, why should he suffer? I'm a sinful person. Vaishnava may think like that. But still, Krishna didn't say, all right, the Vaishnava is forgiving him. Krishna had his Sudarshan chasing Durvasa Muni all over the universe until Durvasa Muni finally surrendered. That's the key point. That the offender has to surrender and beg forgiveness. Then Krishna may... If the devotee forgives, then Krishna may forgive. That same thing happened. Who is that? Who offended Srivas Thakur? He was envious, and so he placed articles for worshipping Durga at the house of Srivas Thakur. Vasudev? No. Anyway, he did that. So then he got leprosy. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was passing by. And this man was suffering so much. Oh, Mahaprabhu, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Patita Pavana, Savior of the Fallen Souls. Please rescue me from this miserable condition. Get lost. You've offended Srivas Thakur. I won't do anything for you. You have to beg forgiveness of the person you've offended. Then he got Mahaprabhu's mercy. All right. One question there, yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. In the example of... That you just read about Shivananda Sen being appointed as secretary for Vasudev Datta. So Vasudev Datta had a service to perform, and he had a certain mood of service that he was performing the service in. And by appointing Shivananda Sen, it sometimes so happens that when a devotee is performing service, you basically say, well, this is really not the right way of doing it. You know, here's some help. That might be disappointing for the devotee. That might basically say, well, I'm trying my best, but now you're saying that...
It may be, but that's sometimes required. Vasudev Datta was an expert singer. Singing doesn't cost any money. I can think of someone else. He's a wonderful singer. But when he was a... but he had... He should have always been singing. As soon as he stopped singing, he would cause trouble. Just as long as he was singing, everything was fine. So, again, sometimes things need attention. Someone is a good singer, but he can't manage or he can't handle money, or in some other way needs support or attention or control.
So who makes that decision, Maharaj?
Well, that's an interesting question. In this case, it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the ultimate decider. Otherwise, the spiritual master may make the decision, or the father may make the decision, or the responsible guardian may make the decision. Husband make the decision. That's a hard one. Women are expert in expenditure, and the husbands traditionally try to rein in the spending. The spiritual master may do it, or the persons appointed by the spiritual master, or the institutional authority, or the friends of the person may appeal to him. Prabhuji, you're such a wonderful devotee, but you're spending like a madman. Please let us have someone help you in the spending department. The superior persons should do it. It shouldn't have to come to the point where the person's own subordinates or disciples have to plead with him. Yes.
Maharaj, if you see in the activities of the nature of another devotee things that are detrimental, and you advise that devotee, or you know, at least point it out to him, and then he is offended, what should one's stance be, the person who is giving the advice?
Well, of course, first we have to see whether we're the right person to give the advice. Presumably he's our peer or subordinate, because it's also a principle that advice should not be given to superiors. It's not our duty. Assuming that that's in place, that he actually is our subordinate or our peer, then he's offended. Of course, we try to speak in such a way that he'll not be offended. Or if he is offended, we try to speak in such a way that he'll be pacified. But sometimes, what can we do? It's our duty. Sometimes, what can we do? It's our duty to say something. The person is, like Prabhupada gave the example, that someone's running off the roof, flying a kite and about to fall off, and you say something to him and he's offended. You know, why are you interfering in my business? Who are you? So sometimes it's our business, out of sincere concern, to risk offending someone for the higher purpose that we may do. Of course, we offend the public in so many ways. That's also our duty. We try to act in such a way as not to cause offense, but duty comes first. The judge sentences the criminal. Naturally, the criminal is offended. The offender himself is offended. I saw a report that Al Capone, the famous gangster, while imprisoned, was complaining that why are they persecuting me. All I ever did was try to give the people of Chicago a good time. Everyone has a good opinion of the way he does things. But still, it was the judge's duty. So the superiors sometimes have to perform their duty, even if subordinates may be offended. And friends sometimes, as a matter of duty, have to try to appeal to their friends, even if the friend may be offended. Then Krishna doesn't count that as an offense. When someone's sincerely working for the benefit of someone, Krishna's, what's the word? Wise, judicious. He doesn't needlessly condemn one. All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.